my ears popped when my roommate played it for me. I was 17 years old. And it made me want to quit college right then.
It is the best-selling jazz record of all time.
Kind of Blue just sort of slipped right in there, really. Wow, what the hell is this?
It was released over 40 years ago, and it still sells 5,000 copies a week, every week.
The groove, you know, doom, ba-doom, ba-doom, you know, that whole groove just sucked me in.
It is universally acknowledged as a timeless masterpiece, revered as much by rock and classical music fans as it is by jazz lovers.
Everybody was listening to it. In many homes did I hear that Jimmy Cobb's ride cymbal beat on Freddie Freeloader. The home of a mailman, a domestic worker, auto mechanic, it didn't make any difference. There was something to that.
Miles Davis's album, Kind of Blue, is one of the most important jazz recordings ever made. It brought together seven now legendary musicians, all in the prime of their careers. Tenor saxophonist John Coltrane, alto saxophonist Julian Cannonball Adderley, pianist Bill Evans and Wynton Kelly, bassist Paul Chambers, drummer Jimmy Cobb, and trumpeter Miles Davis.
The right people together, at the right time in the same room, at the right time in their life. They each were at a certain peak of creativity and coming together with the right person in charge to let them express themselves. And the results end up being magical. It's a masterpiece.
No corner of the jazz world has been left untouched by this one album. Its influence can be felt through its delicate sound. Its influence also can be felt in its subdued mood. And in its alluring melodies. For countless music fans, Kind of Blue has been and still is the doorway to jazz.
I hear all kind of people, you know, says, I never listened to that music until I heard that. So it must be some kind of magic there that overcomes the academic stuff that you have to know about jazz.
What is the special magic of the Miles Davis recording, Kind of Blue? Since its release in 1959, the record has captivated millions, earning its place in jazz history. But it was produced in only two informal sessions, with little, if any, written music. No one could have predicted the impact it would have. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, Kind of Blue, our tribute to Miles Davis's legendary recording. Miles Davis had been attracting attention on the jazz scene since the mid-1940s, With his cool, measured, and recognizable trumpet style, his popularity soared in the 1950s. By 1958, Miles Davis was an international jazz star, at age 32, the highest paid of his generation. He recorded for Columbia Records, the top label of the day. The entire jazz world looked to Miles for direction. Ashley Kahn, author of the book Kind of Blue.
Within weeks of a Miles record coming out, his version would become the way of playing it for all jazz musicians. So even at an early age, even in his early 20s, Miles was looked upon as being the standard.
Miles had a gift for bringing the most talented young musicians into his groups. He spent his career experimenting with new sounds, always at the vanguard of new ideas. Saxophonist Steve Lacy remembers how he looked up to Miles.
We studied him like mad. It turned my life, really. It opened up a whole bunch of things for me. I was with Cecil Taylor for 6 years back then, in 53 to 59, and we both were on Miles's case constantly, really. Up and down, yes and no, why and what, and the whole thing. From that point on, I made it my business to see whatever he was doing, to check it out.
Pianist Bill Evans had also been watching Miles in the 1950s, as he remembered in a 1979 radio interview.
There's certain kind of people that are more or less late arrivers, even though he certainly was on the scene and known and respected. You could hear him building his abilities from the beginning very consciously and very aware of every note he played. But that kind of person, when they finally do arrive at their own expressive level, to me, seem to contain so much more, finally arrived at something which is much more precious.
And Miles was checking out Bill Evans, too. Dan Morgenstern is the director of the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University.
I think what Miles heard in Bill Evans was something that he felt at that point in time that he really could use in his band. And he was right, of course. Bill added another ingredient. Kind of Blue would have been impossible without Bill Evans.
In 1958, Miles Davis had assembled his new sextet. He matched the subtle sound of pianist Bill Evans with fiery saxophonist John Coltrane and Cannonball Adderley, bassist Paul Chambers, and his newest addition, drummer Jimmy Cobb.
I had the opportunity to be working in one of the best jazz bands in the world at a gig that I don't know any other drummer in the world would want. Going around the world, it was really, really wonderful. And, you know, it would be something that I'll remember all the rest of my life.
During this time, Miles took his sextet on the road, into the studio, and with arranger Gil Evans, Miles made the landmark recording, Porgy and Bess. And as 1958 ended, pianist Bill Evans, tired of the hard-driving tour schedule, left Miles. Miles recruited Wynton Kelly to take over the piano chair in his group. But Miles was not completely done with Bill Evans. The pianist had introduced a mellow sound that Miles wanted to capture on record. He had a concept in mind, working with modes or scales, a new approach called modal jazz. writer Ashley Kahn.
Prior to Kind of Blue, Miles had been experimenting with various approaches to scalar tune structures. The tune Miles on the album, Milestones, is a brilliant example of that.
Miles kept the background of the tune simple. The soloist would play a melody over one or two modes instead of over busy chord patterns, the usual harmonic foundation in jazz. With this new, simpler basis for improvisation, his soloists had greater freedom to express themselves. Writer Stanley Crouch.
Bill Evans was well acquainted with the idea of improvising on scales rather than on chords. And so he was able to play that material very, very well. And Miles Davis at that time, having come through the bebop era in which so much of the material was about thick, complicated harmony or a lot of chords, that it appealed to him to be able to play material that didn't have a lot of chords to it. Having Bill Evans there made it very possible for him to have another mind that was going in that direction.
Bill Evans also introduced the trumpeter to classical composers who employed modalities in their compositions, like Béla Bartók and Maurice Ravel.
Miles Davis, we have to remember, was an intellectual. He had a real aesthetic sensibility. And he was always interested in finding out how much material you could bring from one place to another and make it work. He was very interested in the different things that Stravinsky and Bartók and various other people were doing.
But classical music wasn't all Miles was listening to. African rhythms, the sound of flamenco, American gospel and blues all had his ear and found their way into his music. Bill Evans in 1979.
He's the guy that will turn his mind towards certain areas of music or certain people and decide that there's somebody or something that he can learn from. He's very shrewd, you know, in that sense.
Miles Davis was a blues player from the start. The closest thing to modal music is actual blues, by the way. The 12-bar blues form that people had been playing for decades only had three chords in it anyway. So it wasn't as though the playing of a limited number of chords was a new thing. But what Miles Davis did was he took the sound of blues and hooked it up to this new way of thinking for that time period.
I'm Nancy Wilson. You're listening to Miles Davis, Kinda Blue, a tribute to the masterpiece recording from NPR's Jazz Profiles. With his new approach of modal improvisation in mind, Miles booked studio time for March 2, 1959. Bill Evans visited Miles that morning to discuss the session.
Miles wanted an element of surprise, but I think there is no question that it was Miles and Bill who cooked up these things. There were little sketches, I think.
Writers Dan Morgenstern and Ashley Kahn.
He sketched out a couple of compositional ideas with Bill Evans' help, and he assembled his group at 30th Street Studios in Manhattan.
Miles' musicians arrived not knowing what to expect. Drummer Jimmy Cobb.
You know, I never had any extra thoughts about it. To me, it was just another record date for Miles.
With Columbia Records producer Irving Townsend and engineer Fred Plout at the controls, the session began. Pianist Bill Evans remembers how things got started.
Miles ran over the charts maybe a couple times, and then he laid out a structure. Sometimes during a take, he would walk behind you and say, take two choruses, or you play next. The rest was up for grabs.
Despite the modest rehearsals, Miles wanted to capture the spontaneous spark of his sidemen. He wanted to get every tune right on the first take. Bill Evans.
The first time we played each thing through, that was the take that's on the record. So there are no complete outtakes. And I think maybe that accounts for some of the real freshness. Because first take feelings are generally the best. If you don't take that one, generally you take a dip emotionally. You go down, and then you have to start working your way up. And that may account for some of the success of this album. All of those takes are the first takes.
But there was a small problem. Pianist Wynton Kelly had joined Miles' band just before the recording date, and Miles had already planned the session with Bill Evans in mind. Kelly arrived at the studio, surprised to see Bill Evans at the piano. Drummer Jimmy Cobb recalls that Kelly nearly left in a huff.
He sees Bill sitting at the piano, you know, so he's flabbergasted. He said, damn, I done rushed all the way over here and somebody else is sitting at the piano, you know. So I say, hold it, you know, before you go off, you on the date too. Everybody gets to be on the date. Bill's going to play some things and you're going to play some things. So that's what went down.
And Wynton Kelly definitely did play. He took the piano chair for the first tune of the day, Freddie Freeloader. It was named for Freddie Talbert, a jazz fan and bartender from Philadelphia, who was well known in the jazz crowd.
Miles brought me to New York in his little Mercedes-Benz, and I heard Bill Evans had the gig.
The colorful street character lived up to the name Freeloader and became one of Miles' running buddies in the late 50s. Freddie Freeloader is a bouncy 12-bar blues, well-suited for pianist Wynton Kelly, Jimmy Cobb.
Anything Wynton played was going to swing in the first place because he had that really happy sound and a happy way of playing, and he could only hear out of one ear. And every time he sat down, whatever he played was going to swing in any tempo. I always loved Wynton.
The only thing that happened with that, Wynton played a chord somewhere that Miles didn't want, so we started that over again.
After a few false starts, the tape rolled for the only complete take of Freddie Freeloader. Writer Ashley Kahn.
Kelly's solo just takes it and pushes it along, first with these jaunty single note runs, then he builds it up with these richer, fuller chords, bluesy, almost with a gospel tinge to it.
Mm-hmm.
After Wynton's solo, Miles kind of enters in a very laid-back way, but Wynton doesn't want to let go. His comping behind Miles' solo keeps the tune kind of lively.
Freddie Freeloader stands out on Kinda Blue as a showcase of Wynton Kelly's upbeat piano sound. In 1962, Kelly told Downbeat magazine writer Gene Lees that his preference was to just get a groove going and never solo. Freddie Freeloader, with Wynton Kelly piano, Paul Chambers bass, John Coltrane tenor, Cannonball Adderley alto, and Miles Davis on trumpet.
The real magic to So What is that it sounds so smooth and sophisticated and has that sort of gospel call and response feel to it. That incredible balance of uptown and back of the alley.
So What was the second tune that the Miles Davis group recorded on March 2, 1959, and it's probably the best known on Kind of Blue. When the record was released, it was side one, cut one. The whole album kicked off by its prelude, laid down by bassist Paul Chambers and pianist Bill Evans. Writer Ashley Kahn.
You can hear Paul Chambers and Bill Evans constructing it, feeling the music into place. And when they finally strike that right approach, absolute magic happens.
Stanley Crouch.
This was something that they had to play through ear-wise. What you hear is the tremendous ability to make logical music with human passion nuanced on the spot. It's amazing.
Pianist Bill Evans.
Oh, and So I think the introduction was written out single line. Paul and I played it and added a little harmony to it. Other than that, the charts were just spoken.
In an unusual move, Miles had the opening melody on So What stated by the bassist, Paul Chambers. According to Ron Carter, bassist in a later Miles Davis band, Paul Chambers was the perfect man for the job.
The bass line is what gets their attention. It isn't just that people recognize ta-da. Paul was very impactful in that band in that he didn't always play the root of the chord. He had a great recorded sound and was a great soloist.
There's a point at the beginning of the tune, which for most people represents that point when the whole album just takes off. Miles starts the solo, plays about three notes, and then Jimmy Cobb hits this cymbal shot. It's like the shot heard around the world. It just suspends, sustains, hangs there forever, and pushes the tune and the whole album into top gear. Thank you.
Pianist Bill Evans' influence on So What didn't end with the introduction. Ashley Kahn.
The solo that Evans delivers on So What really sounds like he's so determined to play like no one else has in jazz before. He hits these chords that have such a dissonant effect. A little like Thelonious Monk, but much quieter and smoother. It just sounds so startlingly different from what's expected in jazz, yet so hip and modern at the same time.
So What by Miles Davis, with Bill Evans on piano, Jimmy Cobb on drums, Paul Chambers on bass, Cannonball Adderley on alto saxophone, John Coltrane on tenor saxophone, and Miles Davis on trumpet. Recorded March 2, 1959. So What served as a kind of fanfare, a hint of what was to come on Kind of Blue. It was clear that Miles, ever the experimenter, was on to something. His new approach to improvisation had inspired his band to unparalleled performance. Just ahead, we'll hear more about the studio recording of Kind of Blue and how it became the most influential jazz album ever. I'm Nancy Wilson. You're listening to Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, on Jazz Profiles from NPR National Public Radio. When he went into the studio to record Kind of Blue, Miles Davis was at his peak musical form, full of ideas, and with a top-notch band to execute them. It took only 2 days to record the 5 tunes on the album, and not much music was written out in advance of the recording. But Miles had been laying the groundwork for years. He loved to challenge musicians with musical puzzles, saying, "See what you can do with this." In 1958, a year before Kind of Blue was recorded, Miles had given Bill Evans a piece of paper with the musical symbols for G minor and A augmented on it. That puzzle was the seed for the tune Blue in Green. Ashley Kahn, author of the book Kind of Blue.
It's a rare, almost pristine example of the unlikely musical brotherhood between the two musicians. So different in temperament and personality, but so alike in their love of modern classical music and of understatement and subtlety in musical expression.
Dan Morgenstern, director of the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University.
Blue and Green is the most minimalist piece in Kind of Blue. It's really just a skeleton.
Pianist Bill Evans created a meditative framework for the solos, which are suspended over a seemingly endless cycle of chords. The result is a quiet miniature on an album of more extended works. Writer Ashley Kahn.
Blue and Green was actually just going to be a quartet. Bill, Paul, Jimmy, and Miles. Coltrane was not supposed to be on it. Last moment, Miles turns to Coltrane and says, "Come and play on this."
The framework of Blue and Green set tenor saxophonist John Coltrane free. Dan Morgenstern.
It's really Coltrane who stands out. This is one of Coltrane's first great modal solos. There's a wonderful mood to that. There's such stillness. It's an amazing piece.
Day one of the Kind of Blue recording ended, and a second session was scheduled for 7 weeks later. On April 22, 1959, Davis and his sextet reconvened to record two more tunes, this time without Wynton Kelly, only Bill Evans on piano. Everyone was in good spirits, especially Miles, who joked with his producer, Irving Townsend.
Raise up off this tube, man. You get, oh yeah. You know your floor squeaks. You know. You know what I mean? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Let's go.
The date began with a tune that would later be called "Flamenco Sketches." Writer Ashley Kahn.
There were certain scales chosen by Bill Evans for this tune, scales that were shared in the flamenco and North African tradition, and that's what gives the tune, it's sort of Iberian Spanish flavor. It's just a series of five scales and not much else. For each soloist, there's really no preset melody or even an introduction on which to build their improvisations.
Bill Evans had written and recorded a tune a few months earlier, which was the basis for Flamenco Sketches. Called Peace Peace, it was a highlight of his album Everybody Digs Bill Evans. Pianist Bill Evans from a 1979 radio interview.
Flamenco Sketches was something that Miles and I did together that morning before the date I went by his apartment. He had liked Peace Peace, and he said he'd like to do that. And I thought maybe instead of doing one ostinato, we could move through two or three or four or five different levels that would relate to each other and make a cycle. And he agreed, and we worked at it at the piano until we arrived at the five levels that we used. And I wrote those levels out for the guys, just little sketches.
Ashley Kahn.
There's a certain reverence. Some might say it's just them being careful because it's new territory, but there's almost a spiritual quality as they explore this new musical territory. And one can hear it with such depth and such nuance on Coltrane's approach to the tune. Thank you.
I don't think we would have had Coltrane or known Coltrane's potential or the great contributions that he's made except for Miles and Miles' belief in his potential. At the beginning, when I was around when the group started, most people wondered why Miles had Coltrane in the group. He was more or less withdrawn, not fumbling exactly, but Miles really knew the depth that Coltrane had coming. He just gave him all the room, man. And that's the genius of his leadership.
The Subtle Sound of Flamenco Sketches by the Miles Davis Sextet. I'm Nancy Wilson. It's a tribute to Kind of Blue, the legendary Miles Davis recording on NPR's Jazz Profiles. The appeal of Kind of Blue can be felt in many ways. Its intriguing modal sound, its meditative hypnotic character, or its simple, recognizable tunes. All Blues was one. It was a number that Miles had been working on for some time while on the road. In the studio, Miles had an inspiration. He took what had been a straight-ahead blues in 4/4 time and gave it a waltz feel, playing it in 6/8 time. All Blues opens with a simple phrase that serves as the basis for each solo. Pianist Bill Evans in 1979.
Miles had that ability to create a simple figure that still generates a complete and positive reference off of which you can play and still relate to something which is unique. And so even though all blues is a blues, it's a particular kind of blues, it has a particular kind of structure.
On All Blues, alto saxophonist Cannonball Adderley returns to his roots.
Cannon was kind of the blues player in the band.
Bassist Ron Carter.
He was kind of like the B.B. King on the saxophone. Train was playing all these snakes, and Miles was playing all this space, and so Cannon came in and just played the blues.
Soprano saxophonist Steve Lacy.
A consummate swinger. Oh, boy. I mean, this guy could swing you into the next generation. He was irresistible. Everybody loved Cannonball, and Miles embraced him. If you combine Cannonball and Bill Evans, that's far out.
All Blues was the final tune of the session, which ended the evening of April 22nd, 1959. It was the last time Miles Davis and Bill Evans would ever play together. In retrospect, Kinda Blue was a landmark recording, in many other ways too. But it didn't occur to the musicians at the time that they were making history. Drummer Jimmy Cobb.
I don't know whether it was Kinda Blue or Kinda Green at the time, you know. As far as I'm concerned, it was just another Miles Davis date that we did and it came out all right. After I heard it, after it was through, I realized how much and how well the guys played on it.
The jazz community instantly recognized how great Kinda Blue was when it was released in August of 1959. Trumpeter Olu Dara.
My ears popped. It just changed my life in the way I saw how music could be expressed. They were contemplating. I'd never heard musicians thinking.
The effect of Kinda Blue was powerful, but subdued, like the music itself. Saxophonist Steve Lacy.
Everybody loved it. I loved it too. It was great and all that, but it was so subtle that it just sort of slipped in. It didn't startle us. You know, some things are really startling. You know, you hear The Rite of Spring or something like that, or Bartok or Charlie Parker the first time or something, and it's startling. Wow, what the hell is this, you know? But Kinda Blue just sort of slipped right in there, really.
Bassist Ron Carter.
We all understood that it was different. We couldn't figure out why or what made it different, but we knew something else was going on. And we were just as eager to get the record as everyone else to try to tear it apart and see what made this sound.
With Kinda Blue, Miles Davis brought his modal jazz experiment into the limelight. It inspired John Coltrane and others to look deeper into modes for their own music. Steve Lacy.
The modal thing came in at that moment, really. In a certain way, I'm still in that many, many years later. My modes are not Miles's modes. He pointed the way for many musics that came after him. All the musicians were looking at him like he was a weather vane pointing in a certain direction. And, you know, later on they didn't approve which way he was pointing, you know. But he didn't care, really. He said, so what?
So What had an immediate impact in music circles. Writer Ashley Kahn.
It became the tune that almost every musician had to know, whether they were in jazz, pop, R&B. It became a sort of musical handshake between musicians. If another musician could cut it, and they were meeting on the bandstand, one of the tunes that they could call off would be tunes like So What.
Not only the full tunes, but also the individual solos on Kinda Blue have inspired musicians. George Russell's big band version of So What uses Miles' famous solo for its primary melody line. And singer John Hendricks' vocalese treatment of Freddie Freeloader, with help from Bobby McFerrin, George Benson, and Al Jarreau, interprets all the solos on the song. Now, more than 40 years after its release, Kinda Blue continues to expand its audience, crossing generations and styles, reaching younger ears all the time. By any measure, it is a success. In sales, it still sells around 5,000 copies a week. In its songs, top musicians continue to perform and record the tunes from the album, and music students around the world use it as a primer to learn how to solo. And in influence, Kinda Blue has become the height of hip, an emblem of elegance and good taste. Even mainstream Hollywood has caught on. Music from the album has popped up on the soundtracks of recent films like Pleasantville and In the Line of Fire. And in The Runaway Bride, Julia Roberts gives Richard Gere a rare and special gift, an original copy of Kind of Blue.
I found this, and I didn't know if it was something interesting.
This Miles Davis.
I was cleaning out the attic, and
It's very hard to find in good condition. This is incredible. Okay, figuring out what kind of music I like, finding me a rare album. Not trying to butter me up, are you?
I was cleaning out the attic, not attempting the impossible.
Of all Miles Davis's recordings, and of all the jazz that has been recorded over the years, why does Kind of Blue remain the most successful jazz album of all time? According to its drummer, Jimmy Cobb, the secret lies in its simplicity.
Well, it's relaxing and it's not hard, you know. So I think people that don't even know about the music got a feeling from that record. Because I hear all kind of people, you know, says, I never listened to that music until I heard that.
Trumpeter Terrell Stafford.
It was the foundation of my whole jazz experience. When I heard Kind of Blue, it was music that had colors, that had groove, and the most important part to me, that had melody. So I can relate the melody to the solos, because the solos were just as melodic.
Music historian Dan Morgenstern.
It's so well balanced. There is not an unnecessary note in any of those pieces. And you can keep coming back to it. It doesn't wear out its welcome.
For Miles Davis, all the stars came together with Kind of Blue. Writer Ashley Kahn.
In 1959, that harmonic convergence of an incredible band, exploding with talent, recording music that was so fresh and so new and had just been put together in many ways that morning in one of the most pristine and best music-producing studios of the day could not be matched.
Kind of Blue was just one step in the long and influential career of Miles Davis. Though he often played So What and All Blues over the years, he never looked back to 1959. For him, Kind of Blue remained just a memory as he continued to experiment and change. But for a majority of his fans and music lovers in general, his years with John Coltrane, Cannonball Adderley, Bill Evans, Paul Chambers, Jimmy Cobb, and Wynton Kelly will forever be known as the Kind of Blue period. And that recording changed music forever. Our tribute to Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, was written and produced by Jim Luce. Co-producer, Ashley Kahn. Technical director, Duke Marcos. The executive producer for Jazz Profiles is Tim Owens. Senior producer, Margaret Howes. The assistant producer is Madeline Smith. Administrative assistant, Linda Browen. Website coordinator, John Murph. We'd like to thank the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University in Newark, Bob Campbell, Aaron Prado, Mark Faulkner, Phil Schapp, WKCR New York, and WBGO Newark. To email us, or for more information about this program or others in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Or check us out at nprjazz.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Wallace Reader's Digest Funds, seeking to enrich community life through support of education, arts, and culture. Additional support has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, where jazz lives.
Thanks for listening. To hear more programs in this series, go to npr.org/jazzprofiles.